Welcome to Life and Limb, a podcast from Thrive Magazine, all about living well with limb loss and limb difference. I'm Jeff Thiessen, publisher of Thrive Magazine and your podcast host. My guest this episode is Tracy Schmidt, known to most as Unstoppable Tracy. Tracy has a best-selling book and top honors as an international mega success speaker. She's also been named a number one female transformational global leader. She's earned awards as an athlete, a businesswoman, and for her work in underdeveloped countries. She's spoken to audiences in over 40 countries and is Toronto's most virally viewed speaker with over 30 million views in just 3 months back in 2019. And I think that's way more than 30 million now.
Yes.
Born a four-way amputee, she's climbed the Himalayan mountains, captained a towering 110-foot tall ship, and conquered challenges that many would never dare attempt. Unstoppable Tracy has never let limits define her and promotes to others that they need not as well. Tracy, welcome. How are you?
I am fabulous. What a beautiful introduction. Thank you.
Well, you earned it. That was Google. No, we know each other well enough that I've shared that bio many a time. But let's start here with Unstoppable Tracy. That's how you're known to most publicly. Me and you, we met long ago, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But you were Tracy Schmidt to me then. Where or how did that name, that brand, really originate?
So I had a scary, life-threatening moment on a plane when I discovered that I definitely want to pursue my Paralympic dream if I live. And I drove down to Miami to meet a man named Magnus Ligidol, a gold Olympian, because you want to make something happen, you surround yourself with people who are doing it more successfully than you are. And I camped out in his boatyard for 3 months, sleeping in my car. Day in, day out, every day, 5:30, washing and waxing his boats in the morning. And he's a lot like Shrek. And I wish I was the Fiona of the story, but I'm more like the donkey. And I just didn't give up. And on like the 89th or 90th day, in the hangar, late at night, with a beer in his hand, he took a Sharpie and there was this boat that was like on its side. There was a creature living inside of the boat. It was like surrounded in garbage. And he took this sharp and he wrote Unstoppable Tracy because I was there every day for 3 months. As much as it wasn't his thing to train me in his world. And so, in a moment of loving frustration, he wrote Unstoppable Tracy.
That's
But
funny. That's where that came from. And then he let you sail the boat, I'm sure.
Yes. It was up to me to fix it up, and I did. And what's funny is that, like in kindergarten, that's what my kindergarten teacher said to my mom. And when they said, "No, you can't ski," that's what they said to my mom. And when sailing, "No, you can't sail." And each time she'd be like, "Can you just try?" And of course, it would work out. And they'd say, "She's unstoppable." So the word, lots of adjectives surround a lot of us, but for some reason, unstoppable is really anchored in the feedback that I've gotten all my life.
Interesting. I want to talk more about your sailing career, but you've given me a nice sort of segue back to childhood. So, again, a four-way amputee. So, limb loss from birth, above the knees, both legs, and essentially above the elbow, on upper extremity as well, right?
Yes, I do have one finger on my right side,
All right.
and a bit of a single extension bone.
And you use more of an orthotic device, right? With your thumb. Yeah.
Yes, I like to call it Trevor. it's a more approachable. Trevor's a great hand, but like an opposition device with that one finger digit.
Right. I got it. Trevor. I like that. So, childhood in the 70s, and then that was my time as, an amputee child at that time. What was it like growing up back then? It had to be much different than what you see today. What were your parents like, siblings? How did you make your way through the 70s?
70s. I think most of the other kids I met, and like you are acquired disability. That's right, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. So I was born this way. All the kids that I met that were born this way were all foster kids. I was the only one that actually had my birth parents, because doctors would tell, because there was no ultrasounds, give your child up for adoption. And in the 70s, children with disabilities went to segregated schools, especially if you were born this way. And that was when mom and dad went to visit those segregated schools. They did not feel like that was the vibe that I had had playing with all the neighborhood kids. And I'd go to the dentist, and people would cry when I'm going up the stairs. And I was a happy-go-lucky kid. Nobody needed to cry for me going up the stairs. But just the laws and the awareness and the education and the exposure, right? People with disabilities just weren't out and about the same way.
For sure.
So.
And I remember a story you told me about ice cream. And just to set this up, as a kid, strangers would come up to me and my mom and give us money on the street.
Oh, wow.
Pitiful, charitable money. Doesn't happen
Yeah.
so much anymore. No one's
Again, now
handing
you
me
just say
20s
yes.
anymore. But for you, it was ice cream, right? People would
Yeah.
buy you ice cream, and there stood your sister with nothing.
My younger sister, 11 months younger than me. Like, how do you face two little girls and only give one of them ice cream? And so, as a result, I did not like ice cream until my 30s. Unfortunately, I found out that ice cream's really delicious, but
But you
I
always
had
gave
a
it,
thing of,
you gave it to your sister,
oh
right?
yeah, I'm
Yeah.
like, I would just give it to my sister. It really, or and if my sister wasn't around, if there was like a dog that wanted, I would give it to the dog. It was terrible. I was so rude, so ungrateful. But it's like as a child, it really got my gander, shall we say.
I'll bet it did. Following you on social media, you are one busy woman and always busy with so much that you do, from your own sports and recreation activities to speaking on stages around the world and everything else. So what's on tap for this summer?
For this time. So, during COVID, I actually didn't do great care on my legs for the first time in my entire life, and I ended up getting sepsis. And so I ended up not being able to wear my legs. And also because of COVID, sailing really took a back seat. So this year and last year, September of last year, was like a comeback regatta in September, which is sort of the end of the season in Toronto. And I fell in love all over again. And so this year is my comeback year. And I'm like, there isn't Paralympic sailing, but there's World Cup sailing. And we have representatives in the 2.4 and in the RS, which are two, there's three classes of competitive boats, but we didn't have anybody in the 303. And as soon as I heard that, I'm like, okay, I self-funded and got myself on a boat in Australia at a World Cup event in March. And so I've just packed my summer with any regatta that I can see that's para related and not para related. I've sailed in open races the last couple Tuesday, Thursdays at National Yacht Club. So anywhere and any way and any boat I could sail, I'm jumping into to get my game back on.
Would you have adaptive equipment that you bring with you then? Have equipment, will travel, will sail? Is that how it
We'll
works?
sail, right? So I de when I was competitive 2011 to 2016, Magnus finally got on board with me, and we eventually evolutions of the boat got more and more tailored to me. Like the cleats are all over the boat, whereas Magnus fed all of the cleats at the front of the deck, so everything was immediately in front of me, and it was all like sort of shoulder height so that my little arm and my longer arm could reach all of those lines right here. I didn't have to get to them. And the tiller, the other people, they sailed with their feet, and I of course have no legs. So I was my hands were pulling 24 lines and steering the boat. So we put two gigantic PVC tubes either side of the tiller and dropped them down to my knees. So it made the tiller nice and wide between my knees, and I could push the tiller left and right with my knees on, say, the 2.4. And in the Martin 16, it's naturally adapted boat. The lines are fed forwards anyways, but I also use a windlass. So it's an automatic winch that reels the main and the jib, the sails in and out for me, which is great because I'm using my one finger, and all these people with two arms and lots of muscles, they just do like one big long pull and their mane is in, whereas I'm like squirreling away. So when I have the windlass, it helps me pull the sails in and out. But the 303 in Australia, like it's new. So I have no adaptions yet for the 303. But they lovingly call me the dumpster diver, and it seems to be how I start. I saw a broken piece of hose. So I took the piece of hose and I made it into a loop, and I took a line and fed it through the existing tiller, so there was a loop, so I could use the tiller a little easier, so that my hand was free to reach all over the boat for the cleats that are not currently fed into one place for me. So I compete and sail anything with or without adaptions, but I wasn't competitive without adaptions in the high winds. I did great on three races that were light wind, and then I did crap. On three races, I there was 80 boats, and I got fourth, I got 12th, I got 20 on the light out of 80, and most of the people were able-bodied men, and then I got 36, 36, 36 out of 80. So still not bad, but not putting me on a podium so that Sail Canada wants me to be their 303 rep. So I
Right.
get.
So the adaptive equipment that levels the playing field for you, for sure.
Yes. But I'll sail anyway, just to get boat time.
Oh, I know you will. Let's talk about off the water and into the mountains. So I mean, a signature piece in all of your bios is climbing the Himalayan mountains. And for the record, the first four-way amputee to do so, right? And maybe the only. I don't know.
I've done some research and I haven't found any male or females that have done the Annapurna region as a four-way amputee yet.
So, an experience like sailing that most of us will never experience. What was it like? Like, were there times where you thought to yourself, what have I signed myself up for as you're climbing up the mountain? And how did you do that with, I mean, as a four-way amputee?
When you do adventure, you often find there's parallels in life, right? You find like your roadblock in the adventure is also maybe something that you do applying for jobs or in relationships or, taking on new challenges. And in Nepal, I loved working super hard. I would wake up early ahead of the group because my little stumps, I did them on my knees, were shorter than everybody else's long legs. So I would fall behind quick, so I would start earlier and I would finish later, and I didn't mind that. But the other people in the group, they were struggling, and they had moments where they were ready to like, "What have I signed myself up for?" And what I find in life and in on the mountain is that that was projected onto me. Like people, they're like, "How could you bring her? You didn't set her up for success. It doesn't make sense that this happened." And like everybody was trying to be an advocate for me. And the only people really struggling were them. And it really was my biggest struggle was trying to like be empathetic and appreciative, and but also like, I'm okay and we've got this. And so that was my biggest struggle. And it was beautiful moments. Like I crossed the suspension bridge over the Modikola River, 850 foot drop, and it was like long days and really physical, and everybody was taking a rest after the suspension bridge, but my heart was like beating. And there came a, so I kept going because I'm always behind the group, so I kept going, and I met this farmer, and he asked a student like, if she looks like that, what do the rest of them look like? And one of the Nepalese porters replied, one of them doesn't have a head. And it was hilarious, right? And it might be insulting to some, but This porter, he'd been traveling with me for 9 days, and he could make a joke at how ridiculous. And I know you know this story, Jeff, but that was like, if in Nepal, like zero technology, people with disabilities die off, babies born with a disability get killed off. There is no awareness or support, no crutches, no prosthetics. And this guy, after 9 days with me, could make a joke. Like we can bring awareness and acceptability anywhere if that can happen in Nepal in the most extreme circumstances.
I mean, when I talk about inclusion and training, we hear training all the time, and that word kind of puts me off a little bit because it's familiarity. It's getting comfortable
Yes.
and getting to know one another, right? And so your porter was right, in step with that. But those that were climbing with you, it seemed that there were some societal stigmas there that, like you said, maybe they were projecting a little bit on their own inadequacies. But interesting
And
dynamic. It must have been more so or as much as the physicality of climbing that mountain.
yes, and there were certainly, and just as in life, like with this podcast with you, Jeff, creating that lifeline and creating advocacy and creating more so a space for like authentic voice, right? Like you and I both know Kathy Smart and her husband, Steve Couchman. And they were amazing at facilitating and generating conversation and getting to the crux of where that feedback came from. I don't want to do a paintbrush over everybody. There were allies like yourself out there, and why this podcast is so important.
No, thanks for that. Kathy was one of my first employers at March of Dimes,
Yeah,
actually. And I know
mine too.
you started the Independence Afloat. Is that the name of
Well,
the?
Kathy started it, and then I felt like when she left, I got to take over.
Gotcha. Sticking with sports and recreation, and you do so much. One that really intrigues me, though, that I've done a little bit, maybe lacking a little certification when I should have had it, but scuba diving.
Oh.
And it would seem to me that that might be one of your most challenging activities. I mean, sailing a boat, I have no idea. I don't do that. I mean, there's truly an element of risk and danger with scuba diving, and you don't have any hands or feet, frankly. Am I
Yeah.
worrying for you needlessly, or tell us about that.
So, well, I love to swim, and I grew up in affordable housing, and one of the first things my parents did was, they forego a lot in order to get like an above ground but expensive to them pool. And we were the only one on the whole street. And so all the kids used to come down and swim in our backyard pool. And which was great because it brought the neighborhood to me, and lots of friends because everybody wants to swim. And so swimming's been a, I've been a, I'm my when my niece was young, she thought I was a mermaid because I had no legs and I love water, anything water. And so scuba diving was great because I can swim, anyways. And the wetsuit, I've done over 100 dives. I've gone more than once over 100 feet deep. And it sounds exotic, 100 feet deep, but everything turns gray. You lose all the color. It's not that much fun at 100 feet deep, and your time is very short at 100 feet deep because of what it does, the nitrogen that gets into your bloodstream at 100 feet deep. So 30 feet is great, or less. You see all the beautiful coral. But anyway, we've modified a wetsuit to be sewn on my left arm short, right, and tight on my right skinny extended arm. And we've cut off four of the thumb and the fingers, just left me one pointing finger for my glove, and then the wetsuit's cut off at my knees above knee. So that's sort of expensive to get your wetsuit tailored. I can't buy an off-the-shelf wetsuit, but it's important that everything is closed and keeps you warm that way. And we discovered these shin fins where people with legs just to horse around in a swimming pool put these fins on their shins. But I put them on my thighs. And so now I kind of have some fin action and some minor current and medium current. I can swim with these fins, which is great. And I can do drift dives, drop me in and I'll go with the current, right? Which is great. You don't have to swim at all. But I scuba dive with Trevor. And so I can pinch my nose with Trevor for regulating. And I hold the I'm putting my cell phone on my shoulder right now to show all you people that are not watching me. But I lift my little left stump arm in the air, and the regulator just follows the inside seam of my little stump arm. So it holds it up, which I need for gravity. And now my one finger that I have, I can push the regulator to let air out or let air in. So I don't need any significant adaption really to let to regulate my nose or to regulate my regulator for my BCD going in and out. And I have incredible buoyancy control, lots and lots of compliments of what I was born with no arms and no legs, but what you don't see is I was born well endowed. So that also helps me with scuba diving, but not with free diving. It's very hard to get down, but it's certainly part of my strength in swimming.
Yeah, I would have
A
thought
little
you would
awkward
have.
for you there, Jeff.
I guess so. I would have thought there would have been a bunch of adaptive
I know.
adjustments, but really just the wetsuit to fit your body. Yeah.
Yep, it's so great. And there are motors that can drive you around, but I'm not on a motor.
Yep, I'm familiar with them. I love snorkeling, and like I say, I've scuba dived a few times, so I love the water like you too. Just the freedom of it, right? Yeah.
Yes. And because I could swim, I could sail. Because I could fall out of a boat, right? Initially. Now there's adapted boats and there's lots of creative solutions with certification, so you don't have to write a capsized boat. You don't have to be able to swim with a disability. You can be paralyzed your entire body and just sip and puff in a boat. You don't When I learned to sail in the 80s with Kathy at Independence Afloat, I needed to be able to swim and I needed to be able to write a capsized boat.
Interesting. I was just a quick story. I was in Mexico with my wife this spring. So, and we always go on a snorkeling trip. So we're on the
Oh,
boat.
nice.
It must have been law that everybody snorkeling in the group has to wear a life jacket. So as the boat's going out to the reef, the first mate is handing out life jackets to everybody but me. And my wife, of course, jokes, "Yeah, you're the disabled guy. You're expendable." This is kind of personal family jokes. I'm like, well, what's going on here? Well, he presumed I was just accompanying her and there was no way I was going in the water, right? So I would just be a passenger today. And I explained to him, and I'm a pretty good snorkeler. I like diving down deep. I said, this is not going to be fun for me with a life jacket. And I had to talk to the captain about it, and they, we could get fined. I said, I'll pay your fine. Just,
Good. Yeah.
so what he did, they agreed, and they grabbed the life jacket that they took in case I needed it, right? And they had
Oh.
the life-saving ring that they dragged behind in case I needed it. And immediately I just dove down, and they both looked and said, nodded.
Oops.
Yeah, you'll be fine. But there again, those assumptions, right, on
Oh.
what our abilities are or are not. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I thought you were just expendable, not that you were going to be
I
excluded. Oh my
thought
God.
so too. You and I met more than 45 years ago in a place called the Ontario Crippled Children Centre. So, so much has changed for amputees since then. Language and facility names for sure. But from the work you do, and you would have a really unique lens on some of this evolution and change and change in culture. What have you seen that has changed significantly, and maybe what hasn't that should have?
Well, I will say, because I've been in the wheelchair for a couple of years, getting back to my prosthetic legs now, that there's a real difference of when I've got my legs on and when I'm sitting in the wheelchair. And it's horrific. But I also have noticed since COVID, I really feel like we've gone backwards in time massively. Where people are afraid again. Children, I used to go into schools, kids weren't afraid of me, but now they're afraid again. I get to earn their trust and make them comfortable all over again because they're so sheltered and protected. And, 80s, maybe even a little in the 90s when parents would like yank the arm and don't look, don't stare. Whereas there was a time there up until 2020 where it was almost too much, where it's like, just ask her, right? And you gotta, I too have to be somewhere on time sometimes, right? Like you got to build in extra time to make sure you educate the world that everything's okay, except that when you're running late, but that's not possible. But now it's gone backwards again. So I think it's sort of we've gone forwards in lots of technology, and we've gone forwards in laws. We've got the Canadian Disability Act opening up now, which we never had, and but I still feel like the jobs that are available are like frontline telephones for banks. What about, I have a master's in business. I've had senior leadership roles. It's really tough to break into a senior leadership or managerial role in a company, which is why I'm an international keynote speaker, but only 1% of the bazillion people that try to be a keynote speaker can actually pay their mortgage as a keynote speaker. Generally, keynote speaker is something you do as well as. So it's I'm very lucky in that 1% range. And that career got totaled during COVID. So it's like building it back up again. So it's interesting, like there's strides where companies are expected to be inclusive, but in nominal roles, and now in grocery stores, for a while people were like shunning that aisle and don't look at her, and then they were too helpful. Let me get that for you, and I'm okay getting it. But mom, born in a different time, is like you get to be gracious and let people help you, and even though you get to do it totally by yourself, because that's what I expect of you from mom's angle, but that I have to be gracious when people try to help. So, not give my ice cream cone to the dog when somebody gives me a gift. I need to say thank you. And so, but it's gone. And then they ignore you. Then they're around you in the aisles, which is great. 2020, 2019, they expect me to be able to get what I need off the grocery store items. And to 2021 and yesterday, where people are avoiding the aisles and avoiding contact, and there actually are things I can't reach when I grocery shop in the chair still instead of with the legs. And it's really hard to get assistance, or St. George and Bloor, and I'm trying to find out from the locals. I know there's an accessible entry. Do you know where the other St. George entry is? I'm only finding the one with stairs, and they're just like, sorry, I can't talk. Like, I just, nobody, I can't ask random strangers on the street anymore because they won't talk to me. But this is in the wheelchair. And then in the grocery store yesterday, nobody helped me in the aisles. But when I was loading up the car, some random man, as I was loading my car, said, "You inspire me." And I was just loading the car. They don't even know about, like, I get it if I climb the Himalayas and a World Cup sailor sailing against able-bodied men, or double black diamond skiing, or 100 scuba diving with no adaptive equipment. Like, I get that. Like, that's stuff that even able-bodied people don't do, but it just loading my car.
I mean, we know in our community, we hear it from so many, that objectification, right? And praising us for doing the ordinary. And I mean, how does that leave us feeling? Well, if that's the bar that you've set for expectations of us, that we can put groceries in a trunk, and that inspires you, that's it's not fulfilling. It's not gratifying for us at all, is it?
No, and it's from a kind space. So how lucky am I that my worst obstacle is excessive kindness? I get it.
Yeah, it's a tricky one for For sure. But it's that microaggression, right? That you hear that over and over and over and over. And
And I wouldn't normally share that, but this audience gets to know or feels it too.
it understands it completely. You've been called, and I read this, a disruption of normal. So normal, it's a tricky word to use in and of itself, right? What is normal and what's abnormal, and are we abnormal because we're not normal? But what does that mean to you?
So that came about. Uber was trying to bust into Canada, and they had some roadblocks. Our taxi drivers were very organized in petitioning, and they had a long, lifelong legacy of controlled medallions, or like I'm making up numbers, like 100 of them in the 70s. So now there's only so many licenses, so they could charge lots and lots of money to charter or share a cab because there's only so many medallions. And so when Uber came, it busted that structure, and they were trying to say that it was the cheapness of Uber, but it was the reality of it was there was a very corrupt background structure to the taxi world. And so they were very powerful in petitioning the city in not getting them in. And we were at a event to disrupt innovative thinking, and Uber came, and there were students that were meant to be inventive with apps, and Airbnb were there as well, like how do we do accessibility in the apps and more. And so I got to know this man Jared at Uber, and he said, "Will you come talk to our team?" And so they ended up involving me, and I said, "You really got to get the voice of many people with disabilities. I'm not the voice." And so that they brought in Mayan Ziv when she was much, much younger, and Luke Daou, who is just starting to thrive with the stopgap ramps, and George from Center for Independent Living out of the spinal cord injury, used to be called Lyndhurst, gentlemen. So they started to bring in the gurus of the time. That were just, and Mayan was just up and coming at that time. Now she's super extraordinary, successful. And so they brought us all in and had us be voices and talk to City Hall about how Uber, like we need on-demand accessible transportation, which Uber Wave, wheelchair accessible vehicle, was the intention at the time. And so that's why they said disrupt the norm. And so I think you've heard me say about, being at 2 years old, I just want a cookie from the cookie jar. I'm not being a hero. I'm not being anything but a 2-year-old in my heart and soul that wants a cookie. And like any 2-year-old, you see them push stools or push, obstacles around to reach something to get to the cookie, right? I'm not aware of not having hands and legs. And so the bonus to that, and being told no in kindergarten, and no, you can't sail, and no, you can't ski, and no, you can't scuba dive, right? Being told no, you learn that you get to say, okay, what's, how come? And then you keep counter offering until you can get a foot in the door. Can we just try? No expectation, right? And then it works. If they, we're not generating possibility. We are generating breakthrough in somebody else's mind to give you a chance to go snorkeling because they had said, no, you're not going. And it's policy, right? We become master generators of conversation from humans that stop us. It's not us, it's everybody else that's trying to create a roadblock. And we need them to be comfortable to get through the door so that we can now figure out what we're going to do to figure it out. I don't know when I why I got on my soapbox at the beginning of this conversation.
Disruption of norm.
Or
That's where we
disruption of
started.
norm. Yes. But the bonus to disrupting those normal conversations of no has created an incredible skill set for Uber during the entry into Canada, for the pilot strikes of Air Canada, for the merger of Canadian Airline, for pharmaceutical reform, for Shoppers Drug Mart. Right? They needed to invent new ways of business. And that's yours and mine and all of your listeners' forte. We become the disruptors of Well, that's impossible, right? Like, well, I'm impossible unless what?
Right.
And we expect people to say, oh, it's impossible unless you were like, and then they say some ridiculous thing 24/7 in the back pocket of a gold Olympian. I'm like, okay. And then I go find a gold Olympian, right? So you, because that seems stupid to find it, but why? Why? What's impossible about that? So,
Yeah, I've heard, and
jump
what you're
too
talking
far.
about, I've heard others talk about it in terms of interrogating normalcy. Don't interrogate difference, and different lived experience. That, I mean, there's richness and currency in that. Interrogate what's normal and work from there. So,
I love that.
yeah. Your friend Dr. Maureen Connolly said that,
Really?
from Brock
Oh,
University. Yeah, on
beautiful.
yeah.
She's a powerhouse.
She sure is. You've been on countless stages, and what you do is lift people up. What lifts you up?
Oh, sailing, friendship like ours and Kathy's and Maureen's, you know, having that handful of people that get it, right? Where you get to be, I am guilty of, because I get to pay my bills, of that brave face and super positivity all the time. And I have you and Kathy and Maureen that call me out on it, and you say, BS, what's really going on? And like, really? Or, you know, and push the envelope to say, well, yeah, you're right. You're the only one that dragged that ice cream cone story out of me. I don't think I've ever shared it anywhere else except when I'm with you. So it's there is authenticity. You get a few people where you get to be completely authentic with, and that doesn't mean you're negative. It doesn't mean you're hopeless. It just means there's brutal realities out there, and then we go back and crush them.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about that, because that was my next question. I mean, your public persona is about positivity, but that's not fake. That's you. That's your personality. But I guess the question would be, does that energy and upholding that energy and that positivity, can that be a burden at times? Does that wear you out? Is it tiring? Particularly like the story you told, you've been out of your prosthetic legs almost 3 years because of sepsis, and living a different identity of disability as a wheelchair user. So, yeah, you get tired.
Yes. And as you say, like that, the sepsis, and you know, you get moments. So I wasn't allowed to leave the hospital, but I desperately wanted to leave the hospital. And one of the reasons I really had to go is they were out of rooms, and I ended up for a short time being in a bed in hospice, and not because I was, because like all of my roommates were, over and over and over again. And being around those families and being the positivity for those families while I'm like still in hospital figuring this out. Like they were saying, oh, you're at an age now where you're lucky you walked all your life. It was bound to be that you'd eventually use a chair. You won't be getting legs after this. Like, it was really interesting times where even then they were trying to give me realistic expectations about walking again. And so what I did is I ordered a Wheel-Trans, and we were allowed to like wander the building, the hospital. So I just wandered for a walk around the hospital, but I actually got on the Wheel-Trans and I went down to Harborfront sailing. And the news was at the Harborfront that day. And Karen Ann Xavier is a phenomenal soul who runs Able Sail Toronto. And she's like, hey, will you demonstrate the lift? And I said, I can't get my knee wet. And she's like, no, I know you normally jump in the boat, but we want to show them how people who can't jump in the boat get in. So can we use you for the Hoyer? And then the media said, can she just do a little figure eight right here at the dock? And she said, I don't mind if you don't mind. And I'm like, no, I don't mind. So I did this figure eight. And then I came back, and sure enough, I'd been on the news, and one of the other hospital patients was like, hey, I just saw you on the news. And I'm like, shh. And I like, I whiz over, and the nurse's desk is like, what? And I'm like, no, that was from a past time. And they're like, you're wearing the same dress. Oh, I wear this dress all the time, you know, like I got caught. But so I really like it, I do get tired, and I like, and Paralympic sailing started because I got laid off from a job and I was depressed in a parking lot. And I know, I've seen with my heart of heart what you focus on grows. And I was afraid to drive home after being laid off from my job that day. And I'm like, well, how am I going to get home? A tree's going to fall on me, or I'm going to have a car accident. Like, and now I'm manifesting it because I'm focusing on it. And I don't mean just the she, you manifest it, you think it, and it happens. You believe it happens. You've got to make it happen. But I'm like, I've got to make this drive home happen in a way that I'm confident I drive home safe. And so I Googled sailing, and I went to San Diego, and that's where the Hurricane Sandy was that made me decide to pursue my Paralympic dream. So I when I am at the lowest of low, it seems to be where I go is sailing. I try to find some sailing. Like same with the sepsis. I'm like, okay, I'm not walking yet. I'm having trouble with the legs. Australia, World Cup sailing. Okay, I'm there. And there I go. And now I'm back to authentically the happy me.
I know you like movies, and you're back in your legs. So you told me you're at the theater on the weekend.
Yeah.
That story you tell about showing up on the news, it's like that movie Four Christmases with Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon, where they don't want to spend the time with their family at Christmas, and they're going on vacation, but a storm stops and they're on the news. That's how the word comes out. Anyway, that is a total aside. Let's wrap up with this. And it's a little bit what you've talked about already. I mean, that overarching message for corporate audiences, as I understand it, is turning ordinary days into extraordinary ones. And, you know, I've seen you bring that energy, like I talked about, to the stage and motivate your audiences. But behind the curtains, which you've talked about a little bit, those private, excuse me, personal and private challenges that come with being an amputee, congenital or traumatic, whatever it may be. Does that messaging translate to a coffee shop, let's say, when you're sitting around with our community, you know, the brotherhood and sisterhood of amputees? Does it extrapolate to us, or is that something that only lives on the corporate stage?
No, 100%. It extrapolates to like every human being I meet. For me, and vice versa. Like I had Tim Hortons drive-through, and I reached out to get the coffee, and the lady was like, "Oh no," and I could hear my mom in my ear, like she just doesn't know. And it's like I can do it. I got this. And she handed me this cup. And I took the cup with my one finger and my little elbow and said, "Thanks very much." And I know that like she left inspired, and it might be for the wrong reason. She doesn't know about Nepal or skiing or scuba diving or sailing. But I know, like, I didn't know if I could go scuba diving in Egypt after COVID. I was in the chair. We'd all been isolated for a couple of years. And like for myself, it was like, I don't know. Am I still in shape? Can I still do this? Like I just had 2 years of all these people in my ears of saying, you got to be realistic and you're older. And now this has happened. Your life is different. Just count your lucky stars, you know? And I had all those doubts in my ears from a thousand of experts. And I needed to self-fulfill, like, you get to feel the feeling like of doubt and fear. And I cried before Nepal. I cried in the hospice. I cried in Australia when I didn't make podium. Like I cry, but you get to do it anyway. You get to feel the feelings, and then you get to go exceed uncertainty. You get to be frustrated that they don't hand you a life jacket, or they don't let me just try skiing, sailing, scuba diving, jumping out of airplanes. Like every single thing, I went to 14 scuba diving schools before I found one, and I got to fall out of the boat and fail my certification before I figured out how to climb back in, but convince them to let me try again, right? Like you it's a big pain in the arse. Why can't I just try like everybody else? And that's frustrating, but it's better than not changing their mind and eventually succeeding.
So what's
I could
the
not ski and I could not sail, but I needed to
so
turn some heads first.
and so for a new amputee, let's say, a relatively new amputee, or maybe someone that's seasoned but is struggling at a different stage and age of life, what is that message from your lived experiences and all that you've and I think overcome is the right word here. I don't want to be sensational, but I think it truly fits. How do you boil all that down? Having a coffee with someone in that coffee shop who's an amputee of some sort. What's that message?
You know, one of the things I learned from people that have acquired a disability or are born now, like Maya and Ziv, is that there's almost like an expectation of their family and friends or themselves, like Maya and Ziv expects the airline to accommodate her. And I've lived a life of not having it. And is that expectation is fair? And that you get to expect it of yourself as well. And so I have some realistic reasons, right? I had sepsis, I lost my legs, I lost my mom, I lost my home, I lost my car, I lost my source of income. Like, it was a crazy time. You can see me welling up even thinking about it. And so those are realistic reasons. And we have some real reasons. You know, if you were a football player and now you've lost your, or a baseball player and you've lost your arms, you know. But when you live a life of no excuses, difficult people, difficult learning, difficult times, when you live a life of no excuses, even when there's realistic reasons rooted, you get to live a life. The bonus to no excuses is you get to live a life of no limits. No excuses, no limits. And that's some real tough love because I know our listeners have some very real reasons. But I could be in that hospice bed or I could break out and get some water time. You know, you get to have no excuses and figure it out and be prepared for that world of naysayers, but you got this.
You've done a lot of firsts in your life, and I would imagine breaking out of hospice and going to the docks, demonstrating how to get into a boat and ending up on the news, and then returning to hospice might be a first for hospice.
Well, it depends if any of them are listening today. They'll be like, "Oh, I knew it." You know, you might have just outed me, but now I'm out. It's okay.
That's it. Great message. Expectations, no excuses. And I mean, it all ties back to, you know, that story you talked about, someone finding you so inspiring, putting groceries into your
Yesterday.
cup. The expectations were low of you from others, but that doesn't mean they need to be low of you from you, right? Yeah. Terrific. So good to have you on the podcast. I really appreciate it, Tracy. The unstoppable one. You know, with that, this has been Life and Limb. Thanks for listening. And if interested in Tracy's book, Unstoppable You, a bestseller, or her speaking schedule, visit her website, unstoppabletracy.com. And it's important to say there's no E in Tracy. Unstoppable, TRACY.com. And you can read about others who are living with limb loss or limb difference and plenty more at thrivemag.ca. And you'll find our previous podcast episodes there too. Until next time, live well.
Thank you for listening. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Tracy.